Welcome home, everyone. Thank you for joining in on this episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Welcome Home is a podcast where I, your host Josh, sit down for a conversation with different people who I admire and discuss whatever's on their mind, and especially focus on life at home in times like this. Wherever you are and however you're listening, thank you for your support, and once again, welcome home. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. If you're listening to this now, this will be our final episode of the month of April. I'm thankful for everyone who's been listening, watching on our YouTube channel, supporting the show by doing that. And I especially want to thank those of you who support this podcast as well as Katina Ministries by partnering with us financially. If it weren't for people like you, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast and a lot of other things that we do online and in person. And I want to let you know that if you're curious about what it means to be a partner with Katina Ministries, the best way to do that is to visit thekatinas.com. You'll find more information there. Everything you need to know is there. So thanks in advance for doing that. And as we get into today's show, I am excited. Very excited to introduce a first-time guest of the show, someone who has an impact on our family and also our community here in Franklin, Tennessee, the greater Nashville area, pastor of Church of the City here in Franklin, Tennessee, Pastor Darren Whitehead. Pastor, thank you so much for being here.
Are you kidding me? I am so thrilled to be here. I love you guys. This is so great.
We have been excited. I told you before we started recording, my dad let me know, yeah, Pastor Darren's going to be on the show. And I said, okay, well, I better read the 40-day digital fast and make sure I know a little bit about
what's going on. It's going to be a test.
No, I'm not ready for that. But I've really been looking forward to this episode. And whenever we have a first-time guest, I like to give them an opportunity, if you will, just to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do, where you're from, and if you wouldn't mind sharing what your connection is with the Katina family as well.
Okay. Well, I am so thrilled to be here. This is great. My name is Darren Whitehead. I'm not originally from America, like others. I moved to the United States from Australia in 1998. And I married an American girl in 2002, and her name is Brandy. And together we have three half American, half Australian little girls.
Nice.
Teenagers. Sydney is 17, Scarlett is 15, and Violet is 13. Nice. So, a house full of teenage girls. There's always someone crying. It's usually me. I am outnumbered. I was one of three boys. Okay. And I didn't even have any sisters. And so God has a sense of humor. He's like, let's see what happens here, you know. So they are actually the delight of my life. I publicly complain about it and privately love it all the time. They're a great joy to me. So we planted Church of the City in 2013, and we just a couple of weeks ago crossed our 11th birthday, and it's been a real God story. It's been really beautiful. It's been one of the great joys of my life to be a part of the church family. I will say that Joe was my neighbor back when I bought my first house in 2001.
Man.
2001, that's 23 years ago, and you were a little boy.
I was there.
You were a little boy.
How was his front yard?
I do have a memory of watching you mow the grass, and you were like so little, and you're like pushing this mower, and we're just judging Joe. We're just kind of like, what is wrong with him? You know, like. So you were directly opposite us, and we lived there for, we didn't have any kids at the time, and we lived there for two and a half, almost 3 years. Wow. And then we moved to Chicago, and we were in Chicago for 8 years. So, and we never really imagined that we would be back in Franklin, And the fact that we get to reconnect at church and life, and it's just so rich, you know. Yeah. They say you can make new friends, but you can't make old friends. Mm. And definitely consider your family old friends.
Pastor. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I agree with Josh. Pastor, it's an honor to have you here. And just a side story, it's been years since our whole family has attended the same church.
Yeah.
When we first moved to Nashville 30 years ago, we all went to the same church, and that was a beautiful part. So our kids, the older Katina kids, grew up together. And then for some, and I think it was part of God's plan, probably 10 years into us living, everybody just went to their own place. Mm-hmm. We worked together. So I know for me, it was like, okay, I don't need to go to church with my brothers too. And that was a cool season because we'd meet, you know, and say, hey, this is what our church is going through. This is what our church is going through. But I would say for the last 4 years, since we've all been attending the same church, mm-hmm. Church of the City, it's necessary for the season of where we're at with our kids. Some of us having grandchildren now, mm-hmm. and we're just honored to have our pastor here with us. And just thank you for how you lead our church and the community, and in turn our family.
Wow, you guys are wonderful. You're so encouraging to me, all of you. Anytime I have any interaction with you, you just have this gift of encouragement. It's like, you know, the idea of encouragement is to put courage in someone. And that's how I feel when I'm around you guys. Oh, I feel uplifted, and I feel like you are putting courage inside of me. So thank you.
Pastor, so recently as a church at Church of the City, we went through the season of Lent through a digital detox. You recently wrote this book here, the Digital Fast, which I've read through briefly. I'm not going to say I'm an expert on it, but my wife Alexis and I, last year was the first year that we both decided, yeah, we're going to take part in this and see what it's all about. And we learned a lot through that season. I think there was a lot of growth just in our marriage and in our relationship through that season of taking a break from our cell phones, our social media, things like that. And this year, when it came around, if I'm going to be totally honest with you, we were like,
We already did it.
We did it last year. We kind of learned. Well, we know what this is all about, but we ended up going through it again, and I'm curious. This is a question that I never thought I'd ask you, but I want to ask you: are you familiar with the comedian Bo Burnham?
I don't know.
You're not familiar? No, okay, no. Totally fine. That's what I was expecting. So, Bo Burnham, he's a comedian that I was exposed to in 2021. He released a special on Netflix that he recorded himself during the 2020 pandemic. Mm-hmm. So the special is called Inside. And essentially what it was is kind of a documentary of his life through the pandemic. He was inside. And just the themes of what that year brought to people, especially here in America. Mm-hmm. And one of the main themes that comes up in his special a lot is the impact that the internet had on his own life, how much it impacted his interface with the world, how much of a part of life that it became for him. And you touch on that too. I think in your book, you say that there's a statistic where the screen time for an average American, it almost doubled from before and after the mm-hmm. pandemic, which mm-hmm. is amazing to mm-hmm. think about.
Yeah.
But I just want to read some lyrics. So Bo Burnham, he basically writes like silly songs. That's kind of his comedy.
Okay.
And he has a song, it's called Welcome to the Internet. And I'm just going to read a few lyrics from that song.
Okay.
It says, welcome to the internet. Have a look around. Everything that brain of yours can think of can be found. We've got mountains of content, some better, some worse. If none of it is of interest to you, you'd be the first. Then it goes to the chorus. Could I interest you in everything all of the time? A little bit of everything all of the time. Apathy's a tragedy and boredom is a crime. Anything and everything all of the time. Mm. And my question for you is this. He talks about boredom being a crime. Is there value in boredom
for the average person? Is there value in being bored away from your devices, away from anything and everything all of the time?
I'm so glad you brought this up because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. There is a bunch of neuroscience now that, and Dr. Felicia Wu Song is someone that I credit with a lot of the research that she has done on this. But there is research that shows that boredom is the pathway to opening a completely different part of activity in your brain. And it is the area of your brain for creativity and for problem solving. And that if you never get bored, then that part of your brain, the synapses in that part of your brain don't fire. And that boredom is actually the way to trigger that. And so when we are continually feeding our brains with dopamine from things like social media, when we are on a nonstop consumption of just content, which is sort of like visual candy, right? You're just feeding yourself visual candy. Then that part of your brain does not fire. And so people are less creative and they are essentially consuming other people's creativity or their ideas rather than creating their own. So I always say to my kids, you know, when they complain about being bored, I say, that's great. I'm like, boredom is the gateway to creativity. We should be celebrating your boredom, you know? And they eye roll and, you know, like... It's actually to the point now where if anyone says they're bored, I'm like, that's great. And they're like, I know. It's the gateway to creativity, you know. But, yeah, I want to get them outside. I want to get them having tactile experiences, you know, getting them off of the screens and getting them back into life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think boredom is, and I'm not an expert on this at all, but if I had to guess, I would say for the majority of human history, boredom was the majority of our lives.
Right.
A lot of our lives were boring. We were before screens, before electricity, before, you know, all of the things of modern life that we're used to and take for granted now. A lot of life, I think, was just sitting around or just doing your working your job, and a lot of it was boring.
Well, what we have right now is that people have a boredom intolerance. Mm-hmm. And so when they get this feeling of like, I don't have something to do, then the instinct is now, because we have these devices which are like an appendage because we have them with us all the time, there is a limitless amount of distraction that comes from these devices. So, and it's not just boredom. So if you feel any sort of unpleasant feeling, you feel ashamed of something that you've done, you feel guilty, you feel anxious, you feel afraid, or you feel bored, we are able to soothe immediately any sort of unpleasant feeling by doom scrolling cat videos on Instagram, you know?
That's amazing.
And it's limitless, right? Yeah. The psychology technology that is used for refreshing on social media is the same that is used on slot machines in casinos, right? And it's called variable ratio schedule. What that means is it's not that it's predictable, it's unpredictable, and that is what makes it addictive. Because just like a slot machine, you're going to pull that handle one more time because that one might be the one where you win. Yeah. And if you're walking away, you're hearing a voice go, oh, man, just one more. Yeah. One more could have been it. Well, it's the same thing with doom scrolling. Is you're just kind of like, all right, I'm looking at, you know, these random things, these random videos of people skydiving and, you know, someone cracking an egg and, you know, and someone telling a joke. And, you know, I mean, it's just all these random things. And it becomes addictive because of its unpredictability. But what it's doing is we are soothing ourselves from any unpleasant feeling that we have in an instant.
That's amazing. I've never heard it put it that way, but it makes so much sense. And I think of just addiction to whatever, to social media, pornography, alcohol, whatever our addiction is. I remember hearing somebody say, well, isn't addiction that you just are not willing to accept life on life's terms? And what you said about when we feel, when I feel unpleasant, sometimes life is unpleasant,
right,
or sometimes it's just boring. Sometimes, right, in a healthy way, there's nothing to do.
Right.
Or you should be sad now.
Right.
This is, or you should be angry because this happened. But I, well, in my own life, I realized, man, I've most of my life was spent trying to, no, I don't want to feel those feelings.
Right.
So let me go get, let me soothe.
Right.
That's a powerful thing with, I think, when you think about it that way, being addicted to our screens or social media, it's more than just we're wasting time or we're not being creative. All those things add up, but what are we trying to escape? What are we trying to numb?
That's right.
I think as I read through your book and as I've gone through the digital fast now twice, fasting is something that I grew up familiar with, Pastor Darren. And my dad and my uncles could probably talk more about fasting. And I never did a digital fast, but I remember I was pretty young the first time I did my...
But not as young as I was when we did our fast.
Credit where it's due.
I learned from the best. I learned from the best.
He learned your religiosity from the best.
No, I was going to say our fasting was not legalistic at all.
And that is a lie. But I'm curious to hear from you, Pastor, about fasting in general. And we've had this conversation on the podcast before, but I'd love to hear your perspective of it. Is what is the purpose of fasting? Why do Christians, not even, it doesn't, it's not, fasting is not just a Christian thing. Mm-hmm. Why, but what is the purpose of fasting from a Christian perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Jesus fasted for 40 days in the desert before his ministry began. So certainly he was exemplifying taking a season to be refraining from food with a desire to actually be engaging with seeking the Father. You know, so fasting is not just about putting something down. It is also about picking something up. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' most famous sermon, he is assuming that his audience is regularly fasting. He says, you know, when you fast, when you give, when you serve. And he's talking about the hypocrisy of parading your religious piety in front of other people. And that, you know, one of the real secrets, and I think this is true, certainly true of social media, one of the real secrets to having a rich inner world is to be living before God, not living before other people. So people who are parading all of their acts in front of other people, it turns out, doesn't satisfy them very much.
Right, yeah.
They feel an emptiness about it, you know? Yeah. And the cure to that is do things in secret before your Father in heaven, and all of a sudden you'll start to feel this like validation from the Father that will feel very different. I digress. Fasting, biblically, is about food. It is not about any other thing. It's and fasting, you know, people fast lots of different things. But essentially, if you want to look at what New Testament fasting is, it is refraining from food for a period of time to be seeking God. And it's probably, nowadays, the most neglected spiritual practice now in our modern world, because we don't like to be uncomfortable.
Right.
And food is another thing that we soothe ourselves with. We live in a time in history where we have refrigerators and ovens and access to food instantly. Yeah. And anytime, again, we feel anxious or afraid, or anytime we feel bored, or we can soothe ourselves with readily available food. And when you choose to not do that for a period, there are all kinds of things you discover about yourself. And there are all kinds of feelings that you become aware of. And what you are deliberately doing is taking a season to say, I am going to prioritize seeking of the Father. I am going to be refraining from food, and I am going to be reminded again that my life supply is from Him. It is not from earthly measures. And, you know, pragmatically, I've done some extended fasts in my life when I've been praying about certain decisions. When we were praying about starting the church, We did an extended fast of just really seeking God. The 40 days leading up to the first day of the church, we did a 40-day fast, just really asking that God would put his fame and deeds on display for everyone. You know, that it would be about him. It wouldn't be about a particular person. So there is a spiritual potency that you tap into when you fast. And it's not always the way you feel. My girls will tell you that I'm kind of cranky when I'm fasting, sort of hangry, you know. And but, I mean, if you do it and you do it purely, a couple of days into it, you actually feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, your body hits this rhythm, and it's actually like a sort of a euphoric experience. It's unpleasant for about 3 or 4 days to begin with. Yeah. But, you know, most of the fasts that I've done in my life, it's not that I've heard the voice of God clearer in that moment, but afterwards I tend to look back and go, man, God was guiding me a lot during that era. And, you know, we do 21 days of prayer and fasting to begin every year. And, I mean, year after year after year, things that were kind of birthed, it was like the seed happened in the first 21 days and they became really significant for the rest of the year. And we didn't even know that was going to be the case. But it's just something like this spiritual escalation happens when you decide, God, I'm going to take a season. I'm going to step back from eating food and I am going to step up my seeking of the face of God.
I think that's so good. And I think, you know, I grew up being taught about the spirit versus the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
How when one is strong, the other can become weaker, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And in my own life, I've experienced that personally. And tying in, you know, your book, The Digital Fast, to your thoughts on fasting, my question for you is this, is... Because when I hear you talk about, you know, the first 3 or 4 days of fasting can be hard. I experienced that same thing, but not with food,
mm-hmm.
with my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Those first, if I'm being honest, the first like week or so was tough for me. Just not checking my work emails, not checking my Instagram, not checking, you know, what's going on with the Lakers on Twitter. All of those things were real things that like I missed and I noticed being missing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But after a few days, after a week or so, it became easier. I came to a state of acceptance of, yeah, this part is not part of your life right now. But my question for you is that, like, when it comes to fasting from social media, your digital life on your smartphone, and the purpose of fasting, what is it that you encourage people to seek when that absence is felt in their life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the book is a guide through 40 days. And the 40 days is 4 10-day movements. So the first 10 days is to detach. And when you detach from anything that is a low-grade addiction or it is a bad habit, you experience withdrawal, like you were talking about. There's like this withdrawal that like you were comforting yourself, you were soothing yourself with something that is no longer available to you, and you feel a withdrawal. So 3 days in, 4 days in, 5 days in, it's not actually a pleasant experience. Mm. And then the neuroscience, and I was talking to a neuroscientist about this 2 weeks ago, but he was telling me that one of the reasons you feel like this is that your dopamine levels are distorted by your phone. And it takes you like a couple of weeks for them to reset back to normal levels. Wow. So he was kind of giving me a science explanation for why people experience what they experience. So the first 10 days is to detach. Yeah. The second 10 days is to discover. And you discover things that you haven't noticed before, mm-hmm. about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you discover how you're feeling about certain things. My goodness, you discover how much you're craving certain things that you used to do on your phone, you know? You also discover about your family, you know? Like how many times has one of my daughters walked through the room, been distressed about something, and I haven't even noticed because I've been on my phone? And that just went, opportunity missed. I don't even know. I don't even know that I didn't know. So you discover about other people. You also discover the voice of God. You've got so much more discretionary time now to be saying, Lord, what do you want me to notice in this room right now? What am I supposed to pay attention to? If we are merely pulling up at the lights, grabbing our phone and scrolling for a second while we've got 9 seconds while we're waiting, like, how does the Holy Spirit speak to you when you've got your mind cluttered all the time with mindless junk, you know? Yeah. So the second movement is to discover. The next 10 days, this is from 20 to 30, is to delight. And what happens is you actually step into this moment where it's a better way to live. Yeah. It's like your senses reset. Yeah. And it's like a new way to be human. You notice things. You notice outside. You smell the air. You feel it on your feet. You smell something. You like everything feels brand new again. Yeah. All sort of the basic human experiences all feel fresh. And that is just this delightful experience. And particularly, you know, if you've got kids or you're with loved ones, you start to delight in the people around you as well. The last 10-day movement is to determine, and you want to determine what is life going to look like on the other side of this. Some of the research that I have done, even with people in our church, is 50% of people don't put social media back on their phone after this. Now, it doesn't mean they never go onto social media. It just means it's not with them all the time. You know? Yeah. And so we encourage people to Marie Kondo their digital life. Marie Kondo is this, she's a Netflix special that's all about cleaning out your closet. Oh, okay. And her whole thing is you hold up an item of clothing and you have to ask yourself the question, does this spark joy in me or not? And if it doesn't, you throw it out. Well, what if you did that with your apps?
Yeah.
And you said, does Instagram spark joy being on my phone? Does TikTok spark joy? Am I glad? Is this making my life better or worse? And so the book is a devotional guide through all 40 days and all 4 movements. Now, it's probably helpful for people to understand what a digital fast actually is because, you know, it's not taking your phone and smashing it with a hammer, you know. It is essentially making a smartphone dumb. So we encourage people to think about the apps on your phone through the lens of distraction versus utility. So distraction apps are things like social media and news and games and email and video apps, you know, YouTube or Amazon, like anything that causes you to spend 45 minutes and then come up for air and realize what was I doing, get all of that off your phone for 40 days. I'm not even saying take it off forever. I'm just like for a period of time, remove that off of your phone and reduce it down to a utility device. So, phone calls, texting, GPS, calendar, the things that are utility functions. You know, the reality is smartphones are here to stay. Mm-hmm. This is not a binary question of you either have a smartphone or you don't. Mm-hmm. The question is, can you make your smartphone healthy and have a healthy relationship with it? And so the quest is to take 40 days to remove distraction off your phone, reduce it to a utility device, and then invariably what happens, especially the first 10 days, is you grab your phone over and over again, you open it, and you realize there's nothing cool to look at, and then you close it again. Yeah. And so we do that without even thinking, and a lot of us pick up our phones for utility reasons, right? Yeah. You're getting dressed, and you're like, is it hot outside? What's it going to be? Is it going to rain? You check the weather, which is a utility reason. That's a very healthy reason for checking your phone. But without even thinking, you check the weather and then you just click on Instagram. And then you just sort of scroll for a little bit and you don't even realize that time is just passing as you're numbing out on this content, you know? And like eating junk food, at the end of it, you know, if you've done it for like 45 minutes or whatever and you're like, what am I doing? You know, you feel a little bit of shame that you're wasting your life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
and you feel kind of sick, you know, like you feel unwell, you know. It's like eating junk food, you know. Yeah. You're like, what am I doing with my life? I'm eating a plate of fries, you know what I mean? So the fast is an opportunity for a measured amount of time to reduce your phone to a utility device, and the book leads you through four movements of 10 days.
That's so good. My next question about this is, when the fast is over, what does life look like for someone who has a healthy relationship with their devices? Not necessarily like, I'm not asking how much time are they spending on their phone, or because that could be different for everyone, but what are some telltale signs of a person who they have a healthy relationship with their device, but also with the world outside of their device?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's not a one-size-fits-all answer for this. It's different for everyone. Some people never put email back on their phone, and others, that's not an option for them. Yeah, right. Like, you know, they're traveling, they're like they sort of run their business or they run their life off of their smartphone. So it's different for everyone. The gut check that I would encourage people to have is you need to be able to check in with yourself, mm-hmm. right? And so some people having social media on their phone is not something that they incessantly check 45 times a day, 67 times a day. They just don't, mm-hmm. right? And or other people, you know, like they bury their social media apps, multiple apps into or multiple pages in on their phone. So it's not as accessible. But you got to ask yourself the question, is my consumption of these platforms, how do I feel when I'm done doing this? Do I feel in my inner man, do I feel proud of myself? Do I feel like this is a good thing to do? Or do I feel like I'm kind of wasting my life a bit on this? The best practices that I see on this, and it's not a one-size-fits-all, but social media is, in my view, about 10% of the problem if it's not on your phone, because you just don't have the access to it. You know, and you don't, like if you're opening up a laptop and you want to look at Instagram, I guarantee you, you're not doing the same amount of time that you would, you know? Mm. Your interaction with that platform feels very different. Mm. Now, your consumption of it is only one problem. The content itself is enormously problematic for how it is forming people. So Jesus said in John 10:10, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and I've come that you may have life. My goodness, has there ever been a device that gives the thief more access to steal, kill, and destroy? He's stealing our time. He's killing our relationships. He's destroying our peace. And it's with us all the time, you know? And so I think that there is this, we've also got to be careful on what we are feeding our minds. Of course, for teenage boys to have unlimited access to pornography, mm-hmm. 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. you know, there's never been a time in history where there has been access like this, you know? It's very destructive in so many ways, particularly in that age. But the group that are the most negatively impacted of anyone are teenage girls, young teenage girls. And research has now found. Now, what's interesting is that there wasn't conclusive research until about 2020. Mm. So the iPhone came out in 2007. And so there was like 13 years where we were consuming this technology without any conclusive research. There was questions on like, is there a correlation or is it causation, right? Correlation is social media doing this to people, or are they just kind of reporting it and then it's just happening at the same time? Or is it causation, which is social media the cause of people's mental health problems? It is conclusive now. And that's why I always say to parents, you know, I got three teenagers. I say to parents, like, I'm not loading you up with shame. Right. We didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like these devices have seeped their way in. Yeah. I'm telling you, I gave when my daughter was, I don't know, 14 years old and she was starting to do sleepovers and I wanted to have a phone so I could contact her, right? And so what did I do? I found a junk drawer in the kitchen with an old iPhone in it and I powered it up and I gave it to my kid, you know? I would not do that again. Yeah. And I think there's a whole generation of next generation of parents who won't do that based on some of the mistakes that we have made. Research has found that the most dangerous time for a teenage girl to have social media is going through puberty. Wow. Now, the reason is, and I got to talk to Dr. Ben Carson about this recently. I was on his podcast and you know, as a neuroscientist, and a surgeon, he gave me a bunch of information about this. But what he was saying is that, like, the brain development takes place, that the most dramatic, no surprise, is in utero when the baby is being formed. The second most powerful time of brain development is puberty. So the brain almost does nothing from baby to when a boy or a girl hits puberty. But at that point is dramatically, like the brain is reinventing itself. And so if you are doing that and consuming shallow, superficial comparison on Instagram, and Instagram statistically is the worst. TikTok is the most addictive. Instagram is the worst. Instagram is so destructive for a 12 or 13 year old girl whose body is changing, whose brain is changing, and like that's a 911 now, and we can see that clearly. And so certainly some of the advice that I would be given to parents, you know, the leading voice on this right now is a man named Dr. Jonathan Haidt, and he has a brand new book out called The Anxious Generation, and he suggests that there should be four new norms that are adopted across the board, and they're very specific. The first is no one should have a smartphone before high school. No one should have a smartphone before high school. No social media before 16. Now, the law is 13 right now, but there's no verifying. Right. You know, you can just say I'm 13 and you're done, right? So new parents coming in, raising teenagers, they should not, like 16 is the minimum. The third is that there should be no phones in schools. So schools from when the siren goes in the morning to in the afternoon, where school's out, bell's out, no phones, no access to phones. Mm-hmm. And if parents really want to get in touch with their kids, then give them a flip phone instead of a smartphone. You know, the generation before Gen Z had flip phones. Their anxiety levels are way different than Gen Z. The final movement is that there needs to be an increase of more outdoor, unsupervised play with kids. So get them outside and have kids navigate conflict with one another without the parents stepping in and going, now, what did he say? And what did he, like, let them develop the skills of conflict resolution as children, as teenagers. Yeah. So they're the four things that he is suggesting. And his movement is getting a lot of traction.
Wow. I think it's interesting, Pastor, you're talking about the effects that it's having on, obviously, our teenagers. But even as a 50-year-old, 52, we're a couple of weeks removed from the fast. And my wife and I lost count on how many times we forgot our phones as we were, you know, going to run errands, which was just an amazing
thing. It's great.
Yeah. Yes. And so we just decided, like on dates, I mean, one of the times where we both forgot our phones, and it was somewhat awkward because it was like, man, we have to actually have a conversation.
Tell me your name again.
But no, I'm just so grateful. This was my first year of participating. And, you know, at first I'm like, man, I'm just going to be a team player. I trust my pastor. I'm gonna participate, but it really has transformed a lot of areas in my life, and still, you know, even discovering things about me in the way I interact with my boys, with my wife, The chai tea tastes a lot better.
Yeah, see,
as well.
Isn't that amazing? It's amazing.
But no, I just think it's. I guess a question I have for you, is this something? I think we heard you as you were talking about the fast and the book, possibly some opportunities to take the concept and maybe even the book to other places nationally and around the world. Can you speak to that?
Is there interest there? Several other churches did it for Lent at the same time we did. I have friends, two churches in California are having me come out and speak and launching their church on the same thing. They're going to do it for the summer. So 40 days in the summer. So yeah, I hope at some point this becomes sort of normal. This is an opportunity for the church to really lead. So social scientists call the problem that we're talking about a collective action problem. Mm-hmm. And what that means is we all realize that these phones are having a detrimental impact on our mental health, but no one wants to step back from it because of FOMO, right? You're going to miss out on everything. But collective action problems can actually be solved with collective action. So when a community together says, hey, what if we all do this together?
Yeah.
So my daughters and all their friends are also doing it. Mm-hmm. So we sort of, instead of one person being, all right, now I'm the only one left out, you know, I show up at school and everyone's laughing about something that happened on TikTok and I didn't get to see it. That doesn't happen because no one's got TikTok on their phone. So in their immediate friend world, in their relational world, they're all going, let's gamify this and let's together step back from this. And particularly in the first few days where everyone's feeling withdrawals, you know, you're sort of talking about it, joking about it, and you feel like you got a little bit of fellowship in the suffering. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the most powerful things about this is that we're just moving this conversation to the forefront. What can happen is we consume this technology in unhealthy ways for years and never talk about it. And it's just, you know, we're numbing ourselves. We realize it's a problem, but we don't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I ask people, have you ever done a digital detox?
Yeah.
Almost everyone says the same thing. No, but I need to. Mm-hmm. They feel that they've got a problem. But that is, no one ever really gets around to it unless their church says, let's do this together. Mm-hmm. Let's do it together. And so parents who have been all judgy about how much their kids are on the phone, they need to come off social media too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like we're all doing this together. Yeah. And a lot of the time, parents are just as bad as kids. Yeah. It turns out it's pretty hard to regulate your consumption no matter what age you are. Let alone being a 14-year-old who gets one of these handed to you, you know? So the thing I love most about it, sometimes people say, you know, what happens when people cheat? I'm like, look, if they cheat, they cheat. But at least they're being mindful of this.
Yeah.
Like, at least they're talking about how they consume this technology, you know? So you bring this to the forefront, and I love the fact that the church can do it. And so instead of a parent bringing it up to their teenagers, it's like the pastor's bringing it up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go home and have lunch as a family, and it's kind of like, all right, what are we going to do about this? Mm-hmm. There is a conversation that would probably never have ordinarily got brought up, and the church is uniquely positioned to actually be addressing one of society's biggest felt need problems right now, the mental health crisis, and offer a way forward. So you can tell I'm pretty passionate about it.
I'm just so inspired, not just as we're talking about the content of this book, but to me, what this says is that you are an awesome dad. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about teenage girls and that being the demographic that's most hindered and by this, and so I know a lot of great fruit has come out of this book, but I think it comes from the heart of a loving dad, because you have teenage girls, and I have four girls, and so I can relate, man.
Yeah,
I'm the one crying too.
I know, man.
In the fetal position.
Well, I will tell you, and I write this in the book. It's one of the opening stories that I tell. But I'm very close to each of my girls. Mm. And, you know, I was a youth pastor for 10 years. And having children of my own has been one of the most amazing joys of my entire life. And I work hard at staying connected to their hearts, you know, and they're all really different. Mm-hmm. And our connection is unique in each of them. And I was feeling pretty inspired this a few years ago. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to take them each out on a date. And I want to have a really specific conversation with them. And so the conversation was, same one with each of them. I wanted to ask them two questions. The first question is, what's dad doing well that he needs to do more of? And then what's dad doing bad that he needs to do less of? And honestly, I felt like my dad game was pretty strong. I was going in feeling pretty confident, you know? I'm like, they're just going to lavish praise on me. And they're just going to be like, oh, I've got the best dad, and you know? And so each of them said something different for the first question. That, you know, they like when I make them laugh or when I cheer them up or, you know, I take them to school in the mornings and it's always a pretty fun time, you know. So there are certain different things that they like about me that I need to keep doing. What am I doing bad that I need to do less of? They all had the same answer and they all said it immediately. I wish you weren't on your phone so much. And you know when your children are like this mirror and they hold it up to you and you're like, you know what? That is true. That is true. And my oldest turns 18 in the summer, and I'm now in the season of time where I'm counting backwards instead of forwards of her moving to go on to college. And I do not want to squander a single moment of precious time with her looking at triviality. I want to look her in the eye. I want to, you know, because these years are fleeting now. And so that ratcheted up the intensity a little bit for me as well. And so I do try to be a really good dad. And that was a moment in time where I needed to make some changes.
So awesome, man. I think it's like putting new glasses on because, you know, after a while with all this stuff, with the comparisons and just the senseless news that, you know, like an hour later, I'm, why did I read that, you know? But it is like resetting and like removing dust and things from our vision so that we can see clearly.
Yes.
And we can hear clearly. I remember an extended fast that I was in. It was like 5-6 days into it. Man, I could just get right in the presence of God.
Yeah.
I could walk outside and just see the trees look different.
Yeah.
Man. Now I'm seeing a creator.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember that. I mean, but it's been a while since I need to take myself back to there and make sure that I'm reset. And
I love that. You know, one of the big hesitances for doing something like a digital fast is FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And you guys may remember when I talked about this at church. I wanna reclaim a new idea that is JOMO. It is the joy of missing out. Mm. This is a better life.
Yeah.
It's a better life. So it's like, oh, you're going to not know about some things. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not on social media, I'm going to miss someone's birthday. I'm not going to see the photograph of the family on the beach wearing khakis and white shirts. You know, like, oh, I missed that one. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Like I think
people
I'll be
that
okay.
Don't live in Wilco. Don't know what
no,
you're talking
I know.
About.
That's right. What is this 30A you speak of? Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's good. JOMO.
JOMO.
Oh, that I love that.
Joy of missing out.
JOMO. So, Pastor, if you didn't know, our whole family were diehard Laker fans, Los Angeles Laker fans, and we're in the season. The regular season just ended. The playoffs are starting. About a week ago, we have a thread of all of the uncles and cousins where we just talk about Laker games. And I sent something to the thread. There was a big Laker game coming up. And I sent
basically a picture of a monkey who was asleep. And I said, this is me going to sleep peacefully, knowing none of this matters at all.
Oh, I love that.
I'm not going to worry about it.
I love that.
I was having Jomo in that moment.
That's Jomo, bro. Because
everyone else was worried about the game. I said, I'm not worried about this.
The joy of missing out.
Yeah. Josh, I'm not worried about the Lakers, and the Lakers don't care about us.
Truth.
One of my, and maybe we can end on this, but one of my favorite parts about the digital fast, and you've touched on this already, is the communal aspect of it. That it's not something that necessarily is intended to be done alone. That it's, you know, my experience has been doing it with the church. And the church, I don't want to project myself onto everybody, but for someone in my generation, I'm 27, I went to university. I went to a Christian university. I spent 4.5 years there. I never found a church that I felt a part of during my time in college. And after I graduated, I moved back here to Franklin, still not really having a church. I got married. My wife and I, probably first year, maybe even more of our marriage, were kind of churchless people. People who, both of us grew up in the church. Both of us grew up taught the Bible, taught the values of what it means to be a Christian. But yet we weren't churched people. And, you know, over the last year or so, attending Church of the City has become more a part of our lives. And I think in my life personally, experiencing the body of Christ again as a still a young man has had a lot of value for me. I remember a professor that I had in college. He was a theology professor, and he said, it's impossible for a Christian to be connected to Christ without being connected to Christ's body. Mm. And that was something that convicted me. Obviously not enough to find a church while I was in college.
Just took a while.
But it convicted me that, yeah, there is some, there has to be some value in the church. You know, why was Christ so passionate about his followers and the body of Christ? And so I feel like I have an opportunity to ask a pastor here, what is the value of the community, of the body of Christ?
That's a really profound question. I've given my life to serving the church. I wholeheartedly believe that, you know, it's the bride of Christ. It is the redemptive plan, redemptive strategy that God has unleashed on the world. Of course, people get hurt by church people and they withdraw. The biggest wounds I've experienced in my life have been from church people. And the most beautiful experiences I've ever had have been in the context of the church. So what we've got to be really careful of is that we don't apply the same degree of consumerism that we apply to most parts of our lives. We customize things and we consume them to the church. And the church is about contribution, not just consumption. Now, of course, you want to be hearing Bible teaching. You want to have a worship experience with unity with other believers. But the church is about how are you serving other people. You see, the church is a really, really unique kind of a community of people. You know, you have different ages. You have different socioeconomic realities. You have different races. You have different education levels. You have different nationalities and backgrounds. There's no other sphere in society that intersects, you know, doctors and people who do landscaping, you know. The church does that. And there's something so beautiful and so human about gathering under the banner of Jesus and worshiping together, meeting people that you wouldn't ordinarily ever meet. Our natural inclination is to withdraw and to team up with people that are the most like us, look like us, think like us, have same political persuasions, the same socioeconomic bracket, and we just sort of validate our lives and our choices with other people that think exactly like us. And the church forces us to be with people who annoy us and people who are really different from us, and we have actually the opportunity to serve people. And we have the opportunity of getting perspective on our own lives because of how different so many other people are. Now, in a time of great division like we are living in now, you know, I've lived in the U.S. for 26 years. This is the most aggressively polarizing political climate of the 26 years that I've lived here. It's a difficult time to lead something that is about unity in a time of such division. And yet, unity is a really, really powerful idea all throughout Scripture. Absolutely. You know, Psalm 133 is you know, brothers and sisters dwelling together in unity, and then it says God will command a blessing where there is unity. You know, the church began on the day of Pentecost. The Holy Spirit came as they were gathered in one accord. So there was like this unity, and then the Spirit responds to the unity. So it's so good for us to not get our own way all the time. Yeah. It's so good for us to not get our personal preferences met all the time. Yes. And the church, if you commit yourself to the church, and there's no perfect church, and ours is not perfect, but if you commit yourself to the church, it will impose that on you. And you have to learn to serve other people and not just serve yourself. So that's certainly one of the things. You know, God has deployed spiritual gifts for all of us. We're made differently. The body of Christ is made up with lots of different kinds of people. And we are all called and enlisted to be using our gifts in the body of Christ. And when you are apart from a local body, you don't have any opportunity to be ministering to other people and to be using your gifts. And so, you know, we have a lot of people in this town, sadly, who are not kind of part of a regular church. And over the course of time, I do feel like it forms you towards individuality and ultimately low-grade narcissism of just sort of, I can do my quiet time and that's it,
right.
If they do, you know.
That's so good, Pastor. And I appreciate your time, you coming here. On this podcast, we kind of have a tradition that started by my Uncle Yeti, actually, where when we have a guest, we like to leave them with an encouraging word. And in Samoan culture, my dad has taught me this, that we have a lot of reverence for our pastors, not that you're holy or that you're perfect. We know that you're human just like everyone else, but we do respect the calling that God has on your life. And Dad, today, as we end, I want to ask you to carry on our tradition on this podcast to honor Pastor Darren, and if you would, just leave us and him with an encouraging word.
Man, thanks, Josh. I'm honored. As you were talking about the church, Pastor, I thought, I feel your passion, and for the last 4 years, I've been blessed. I think our whole family has been blessed to sit under vision, but the execution of the vision. You know, what you said is what I experience every Sunday or when I'm at church as we're at the Church of the City. Man, our church it could not have been named a better name. Because I think what I sense there is we are here to serve this community. We are here to serve other people. And it's refreshing for me because we grew up in church. And I'll just be honest, I'm not blaming anybody, but I felt like in many ways we were apart from the community. I mean, we preached sermons on you are set apart, mm-hmm. which meant we don't go where they go, we don't do what they do, we don't bowl or eat or watch movies because that's where the community is at.
Sure.
And as shallow as that seems, I think as a follower of Christ, let me speak about my own life, there are some times when I can fall back into that of just me and us four and no more. And so I appreciate the way you lead, the way you teach, and the way you live to serve others. Your daughters, your wife, old friends and new friends, and even people from California that are here.
Amen.
I appreciate that. And, man, we honor you and bless you. And as your daughter is now where she's at, man, I get emotional when I think about that. Because I remember when this dude, when he graduated from high school, somebody told me, hey, just cry whenever you need to. I cried for a year. And he stayed home and went to Columbia State. And I thought, oh, I'm good now. And then the second year he left, I cried for another year.
Yeah.
So blessings and cry on, my brother.
Thank you, Joe.
Where can people find the book?
So you get it at Amazon, and you can get a Kindle version on Amazon as well. If you, if your church wants to go through it and you want to buy them in bulk, if you go to thedigitalfast.com, you can get them at a rate. If you buy a certain amount, you can get them as much as 60% off, and you can go through it together as a church.
Awesome. Well, I know a lot of people are going to be impacted and touched by the spirit of this book and the ideas that are inside of it. And again, Pastor Darren, thank you so much for being here. You are welcome back on the show anytime you want to.
Thank you. I'd love to come back again. This has been amazing.
We'll do it again sometime soon, hopefully. To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day. Try to do the swamp day to day.